It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
We are back, Keenan. Week two, false start. Eric Henry, Keenan Womack, Texas Sports Unfiltered. Appreciate y'all rocking with us for another week. And my man, first off, before I jump into things, just how was the weekend? How, you know, things treat you? How you feeling after a week of full-time radio? Full-time, I shouldn't say radio, full-time online radio. How you feeling, man?
Dude, I'm great. I think we're being very well received from everybody I've asked. Shouts out my wife's grandparents who are also watching today. So shouts out Jeanette. Shouts out Ed. Great, great people. Love them both. Yeah, I'm really happy with the situation, man. I'm really enjoying the show. Really enjoying doing the research. And also real quick, I guess we should probably plug stuff at the end, but real quick, yeah. I'm dropping my Jordan Pope breakdown either today or tomorrow. My like in-depth, like video GIF breakdown of him. I'm about halfway done with it right now. So be dropping that either today or tomorrow. Go ahead and check that out on Draft Punk Official. And I will post the link to that.
Make sure you check that out. Of course, I will be dropping my inside deals using some of the advanced analytics, talking about what Jordan Pope brings and also just kind of how this lineup shakes out as well. So Keenan and I are not competing. You can take one, you can take the other.
Read them both.
Do them both, you know, get the full scoop there. But again, appreciate y'all rocking with us. Listen, a lot to dive into. I definitely want to pick up where Jeff and Jordan left off in terms of Texas's draft. I mean, yes, we talked about it last week, but I don't think any of us expected it to be what it was in terms of the sheer number of Longhorns drafted. I mean, just to set a, you know, haven't had that number in 30 years, Keenan, and also want to dive into some of the comments here. CB, what up? Jake Bayless talking about me rocking the Lightning sweater. Yes, of course, we are down 3-1, but hey, once a Lightning fan, always a Lightning fan. Jake, how do I like the Rays, City Connect? I love them. I do too.
But they're again, sick.
I'm probably speaking to an audience of three people here, so I'll try to keep the Tampa love to a minimum, but I appreciate it there. Got to dive into this draft, Keenan. Let's jump right into it. Just your initial thoughts, man, with the amount of Longhorns drafted. We talked about the guys, the top end guys, but just what does it say to you about where Steve Sarkisian has this program to have that many guys go in the NFL draft? And second part, do you almost kind of look back at last season and have any part of what ifs? Like, you see, we got the questioner from our guy, Sam Vinson, who says this, right? Like Jeff, there were plays in front of Jeff in the previous show. There were plays that got us there, including the Washington game. They will need that again. Do you almost look back at like, what if, considering how much talent was on this roster?
No, because I mean, they were essentially as good. I mean, you know, they lost barely in the playoff, and there's only four teams that make the playoff out of 130-ish teams. So, you know, I get why people would say, have lamentation and say, oh, Texas should have won a national championship because of all this talent. But it's hard to win a national championship. Only one team gets to do it out of 130 every year. And the team that did do it this year had 13 draft picks. So that's the kind of stuff that happens. I can tell you, it was a cathartic moment as a Texas graduate, as a Texas, I can't say fan since I'm in the media, but you know what I mean. A guy that pulls for the program. And it was just a marquee weekend, man. I mean, it was really cool seeing Whittington get picked up in the fifth. I think it was the fifth round. That was awesome. He is the most diehard Longhorn. I mean, that guy, if you're a Texas fan, you love Jordan Whittington. That's just how it is. He's one of those guys that just represents the university as well as you could. He's just a perfect sports ambassador. If you take away Blues or Beck's fumble. Yeah, I mean, there's that. But, like, what if Kansas State converts on the two-point conversion in that game? Like, you could play what if all day. You could go either way. There's chances. There's ways where they don't make the playoff at all if you replay the season. But then there's also, you know, maybe they go further. I don't know. But I think it's hard to look at that team and be disappointed with the result because it was pretty awesome result. And more than anything, I think, all right, get ready.
Okay. I'm ready.
You ready? You sitting down?
I'm sitting down. What's up?
Sark is off to a hotter start than Mac Brown, and I think he might end up being the best coach since Daryl Royal.
That is,
I'm that confident. I just think he is the guy. I really do.
You said off to a better start than Mac Brown. I don't have Mac's record in front of me, but Mac Brown got there in what, 90? I'm sure
98,
but 98 or 97 took over John Makovic, I believe.
Yeah, he took over for Makovic. Let me make sure.
97, 98. This is it's better than Frank. This is what I'll say in relation to that.
Yeah.
And CB says Sark just bested Mac's best draft by 4.
Yeah. I don't mean necessarily wins, because first season he wasn't better. Like, Mac had a better first season, but
right. Okay. So before I answer, what are specifically are you referring to? Are you saying just having the program in a better place? Because I was going to go wins.
Yeah.
So how are you?
I think it's got a higher trajectory. Like, I think okay. I think Sark could win more than one national title at Texas. And I know Mac could have won 2, but he had the Colt injury. But man, I just think Sark is kind of on another level, man. I really, because I wouldn't say that. I watched Mac Brown's, you know, I was a kid, but yeah. I grew up with that program. Right. I grew up with that program. I became a real diehard football fan in 2003, college football. I didn't get as much into the NFL until later, but I really had like a pretty good hand on the pulse of the football program. I was a diehard Texas, just college football fan in general. Like, that was my first love of sports, is college football. So it's interesting to compare the two, but I think Sark has the potential to be end up with more success, which is crazy to say. Yeah, Mac's first conference was the 05 season. Yeah, I mean, Sark getting a conference championship 3 years in is a big deal. It's a big deal.
CB says Mac should have played for a title in 01.
They got wrecked by OU that year, didn't they?
Yeah, if my memory serves me correct, 2000 was the Florida State Virginia.
OU Natty. Yep.
OU. Okay. Yeah,
99. It was OU and Florida State in 2000.
Yeah, Florida State, Virginia Tech was 99. OU, yep. Florida State was 2000. 2001 was Miami.
Ohio State.
Ohio.
Right? No, that was 03.
No. Yeah. The Ohio State one is the one that they lost. Who did they wreck to win that national title? Was that Oklahoma?
In what year?
01.
It was LSU that year, wasn't it?
Let's
pull it up. I'm gonna pull it.
Yeah,
up.
You'll pull it up. Only reason I'm saying I'll just pull up Chris's really quick, because I maybe played for a title. I don't think anyone was gonna beat that 01 Miami team.
No. Yeah. So okay. Yeah, here's the order. So 99 Florida State, 2000 Oklahoma, 01 Miami Florida,
right.
02 Ohio State.
Yeah.
And then the South Carolina. The Southern California dynasty kind of rolls along. LSU and them split, and then
well, hang on and see. Chris, I dives and you know makes a point here, right? And about Texas in 01 would have played Miami. I absolutely agree. Yeah, Jake, you're correct. Miami beat Nebraska. There was Eric Crouch. I remember.
Yeah, they wrecked them. Yeah, beat like 37-14 or something.
And to Jake's point, yeah, if you win that one, it's a sacrificial lamb. No one was beating that Miami team, right? But to Chris's point, they should have played for a title. So that would have been 98, 99, 2000, 2001, four seasons into Mac's tenure there. What I'll say is this, because I think you raised an interesting point. I think the landscape of college football, I think Texas is in a much better place, but that has more to do with the landscape of college football. You go back to 98 to 02, 03, And Chris is right. Nebraska did backdoor in. No, he's correct, because that was still the BCS era there. Southern Cal is coming. Miami's already there. Florida State is still there. You can make the argument that Penn State is still not necessarily playing for national title, but they're still a power. Yeah. Nebraska is still someone to contend with. I don't think, and this is just me, my personal opinion. Hell, even the Florida, the Gators were still a team, you know, that were competitive then. I think you got about 5 to 7 teams who truly can compete for a national title each year. I think Sark has them. Sark has Texas as one of those teams. When you take in totality, NIL, facilities, recruiting, Texas is there. And that, and again, maybe this is a discussion I'll have to dive into with Jeff, you know, another platform, Keenan. But like, that's why I think when I talk about what my perception of Texas was at growing up in Florida, it was never what SC was under Pete Carroll. Miami, that the which people forget, it was a short stretch of Miami, right? Like Butch Davis leaves
4 years. 5 years? Yeah,
Butch Davis leaves in 2000. You can make the argument they should have played for a title in 2000. By 03, they lose. 04, 05, they're kind of meandering around, and then it's done. That Miami run is done, you know? So, yeah, I mean, it's interesting to your point. That's something we might want to have to dive into a little bit. Just to kind of come back to the draft before we put a cap on that.
Yeah.
No, really quick, we've got a – Josh Newman of Lone Star Live join us at 12:30 to talk all things UT. But my thing is this, and I know I said the cliche, the standard is the standard. But now, yeah, like, okay, you just had Jake's is Larry Coker had the easiest job ever.
I just read that.
2001. You are 1,000% correct there. There's the comment there. And Chris, 01 to 09, Texas won 101 games. Interesting. See, I didn't realize
it's like coaching Montverde High School.
Exactly. But no, I think this year's team definitely has the opportunity to be better. Just really capping again those draft comments. Seeing guys like Keelan Robinson, Jordan Whittington, you know, those guys get drafted. To me, that's the buy-in from the NFL that, hey, Sark has something going there. We believe in these guys, right? Now, obviously, with Jordan Whittington going to LA, there is a bit of a Texas tie-in because Tate Haver is Les Snead's son, right? So obviously he was very familiar with, you know, the Texas program. But still, getting those Jalen Ford, those guys who you go top to bottom, we want Texas products. To me, that's huge. And our guy Rob here says, we'll see what happened when Texas plays in the year on the SEC. You're not wrong.
True. I'm not saying they're going to cakewalk to a natty. That's not what I'm saying at all. But they're on track to be more than competitive.
Yeah, you know? No doubt about that. I just think, and I even look at this year's SEC schedule again. I don't see any reason to say we're going to see what happens when Georgia comes to town. We know they're a powerhouse. We all know you got to go to Texas A&M, right? And that's obviously going to renew a rivalry and you know, those things. But I don't see any team that on paper, while Texas still has some things they need to fix, we've talked about the defense a lot last week. I'm Jake, I'm with you. I just see your comment. Not to be arrogant, I think we should at least go 11-1. I was going through looking at the schedule. And I don't know if you looked at it, Keenan, and kind of playing around with the best case or worst case scenario. I have to talk myself into a worst case scenario.
I need to.
Into an 8-4. I have to talk myself to that because 10-2 at bare minimum in my mind. I'm not saying they run the table, but you get a Georgia when they've lost some guys. I Texas A&M, we see the state of that program that Jimbo Fisher left it in. You know, you can drum up all the emotional rivalry crap all you want.
Yeah.
They can't beat Texas in my mind. So we'll see what happens. Real quick, I want to dive into this before we bring on Josh and you know, obviously prolong UT. Go NFL for a bit, man. You're a DFW guy.
I am.
What do you think about the Cowboys? Jerry Jones made it known to the entire world that he wanted Jonathan Brooks. Doesn't happen. And not only do they not get him, they don't get a running back at all and bring back Ezekiel Elliott. Your thoughts, man.
Man, it's just like I was at work a couple days ago and my coworker was like, Hey, man, Jerry Jones just said Zeke Elliott is starter quality. And as soon as he said that, I was like, we're cooked, man. Because maybe he is. I don't know if he is. Because the problem with Zeke Elliott was he was amazing his first 3 years in Dallas, but every year he had 10 yards per game lesser than the year before. For his first like 4 or 5 years until he was down to like, you know, 70 yards. Cause his rookie year, one of the best running back seasons I've ever watched as a Cowboys fan. And the Cowboys have had MVP running backs like DeMarco Murray. But I mean, Ezekiel Elliott, his rookie year was as good as any running back in the NFL, man. I mean, just speed, strength, power. He could block, straight line speed, shifty. He could do it all. But how many miles does he have left? You know, I think that's really the question. How many miles does he have left? How many more hits can he take as a starting running back in the NFL? I just like, they were talking about it on the show before us. It's just an hour with, by the way, if you guys haven't seen it, Jordan and Jeff Howe, great time. They were talking about that too. And basically what they were saying was they let everybody know they wanted Jonathan Brooks in, you know, at pick 56. They wanted, everybody knew that. So of course somebody's going to go, I hate the Cowboys, an owner, and be like, and I want Jonathan Brooks. Of course that was going to happen. Of course. So I'm frustrated. I'm annoyed. I love Zeke, but like, that can't be your only starting running back. You know what the rest of their running, like what their backfield looks like right now? It's like Royce Freeman. What's the kid from Kansas State? Deuce Vaughn. And yeah, because Pollard went to Tennessee. So they have nobody left at tailback. And it's really unfortunate they didn't draft a tailback. I understand that like running backs don't have the most value, but there is so much value in taking a running back in the third round, in my opinion.
No, listen, I'm right there with you. While I certainly am not a Cowboy fan, obviously living here in Austin, it is the you know, the local team just by venue of the game you get. And I was stunned at, quite frankly, the fact that, you know, you have, first off, what that would have meant in my mind to bring someone who, you know, is the top back in the nation, at least draft eligible, and to bring him in his home, keep him in his home state, to not do that was stunning. And I, you know, we'll probably have more time to upon that. I want to make sure we get to some of these comments here.
Sure, yeah.
Rob talking about the Georgia weekend will be insane.
No, it's the same weekend as Circuit of the Americas.
The F1 the same week as that. So that is going to be a wild weekend here, and it's definitely something I actually want to touch on when we get done with our guests. Kind of, you know, the SEC. Event that you're looking forward
to. Sure, yeah, I love that question.
Come back to that from last week. But no, just to finish up that thought on Dallas, man, like, it would make me insane to be a Cowboy fan because your owner, it's at the point where it's just like, dude, what are you doing? What is the goal here? Like, I don't know how much of a baseball guy. Well, I know you're a Rangers guy. I know you're a Rangers guy, but if you remember like the last of the George Steinbrenner years with the Yankees, mm-hmm. where it was like, just get out of the way and let someone else make the decisions.
Same thing.
That's kind of the way it feels, you know, like it is stunning to me that the Cowboys could have someone that would have played well here in state. And quite frankly, with the way modern medicine is going, probably would have been ready to go, you know, not saying ready week one,
yeah. but
you're getting a steal, man. So to think I think Zeke is, you know, probably come up on 30 to think that he would have been.
He's my age, yeah.
Yeah, to been the option at running back. That to me is one that I am still processing. But as we said, big weekend for UT, 11 guys drafted. So I want to bring you guys as many voices as possible to talk all things UT. And got a special guest coming in here. He is the pride of Long Island by way of Utah. He's going to laugh as I bring him here on the stage. Check him out at Lone Star Live, Texas beat writer, reporter, Mr. Josh Newman. Josh, what's going on, my man?
How are you guys? I appreciate you having me.
Of course, anytime, man. Thank you for coming on.
Anytime. And listen, cannot think of a better time to have you jump on, coming off of what was a weekend that, you know, I know your first week, I think, on the ground. It was at the Sugar Bowl, right?
Yeah, first. Yeah, I guess you could say that. I was actually still living in Utah trying to, like, cover Texas from Salt Lake City, Utah. And, yeah, I was fortunate enough to be on the ground at the Sugar Bowl. And then it was weird, right? You cover the Sugar Bowl, and then you go home to Utah. Like, I didn't get here until, like, late January. But, you know, been on the ground here about 3 months now and, you know, got through spring practice and got through the NFL draft. And really, you know, we're still months away from playing college football. But I'm, like, chomping at the bit here to, like, cover a Texas football season. You know, and what better time to be here, right? You know, them joining the SEC and everything that goes along with that. So just, you know, feeling very optimistic, very excited.
Let me ask you this, because one of the things that, you know, Jeff and Jeff Howe, of course, you know very well from the beat, and Jordan Scruggs, also Horns 24/7. One of the things that they kind of hammer home with me is that I wasn't here for, and Keenan as well, my co-host, you know, someone who went to UT. I wasn't here for the mediocre years, the disappointing years. And I have a fresh perspective. You got even a fresher perspective than me, again, having been here, you were on the ground since late January. Just kind of your overall thoughts, I guess, Josh, on UT football coming off of having 11 players drafted. Again, that is a staggering number considering where they were 2 years ago. And just what maybe your expectations are for this program heading to 2024.
Yeah, I mean, I think the expectations are high, and rightfully so. I think I'm a little more bearish just from the standpoint of, like, I think there's a lot more questions than maybe some people realize. It's like, yes, the wide receiver room is clearly very talented, right? Isaiah Bond and Matthew Golden and Silas Bolden when he gets here. But in fairness, those guys are all new and they're trying to acclimate themselves to, you know, not just the football program, not just to Austin, but to the campus and everything that goes along with being a college student. You know, Eric, you know, you've written, I've written, you know, there's a question at defensive tackle. Is there enough depth? Do they need more guys? You know, there's just a few more questions, and I think a lot of people are willing to admit. But, you know, on paper, they're really good. And you've got a third-year incumbent starter in Quinn Ewers. You've got two guys at running back who you think are, you know, number one caliber guys in C.J. Baxter and Jaden Blue. Offensive line returns 4 out of 5 starters, I believe, right? Kelvin yep. Banks is a first-round talent at left tackle. So there's a lot to be excited about. And, yeah, they're going to start the season ranked in the top, you know, 3, 4, 5. I don't know that they're better than Georgia, but they certainly have enough, I think, on paper where you can envision them at least contending for the SEC. And if you're contending for the SEC, that means you're very deep in the mix to get to a 12-team college football playoff. So, again, you know, the portal window closes tomorrow, but, you know, guys can still commit. So we'll see what they do here down the stretch with the portal at defensive tackle. Maybe at cornerback now, you know, we'll see, but there is certainly enough reason to believe that they're going to be really, really good. And when I say really, really good, like, I think the high end for Texas is contending for a national championship. I don't think that's, like, crazy to say.
Josh, I'm going to pass it to Keenan after this one. When you see a team have 11 players drafted, and obviously the draft isn't necessarily indicative of where a player is now. Some of that is projecting forward and what you'll think that player will end up becoming. But Texas having 11 players drafted, does that shape or change, modify any way in which you, the prism in which you view last year for Texas?
Not really. I mean, you know, Steve Sarkisian liked to, you know, make the connection between having a good season or having a really good season, you know, like they just had, with how many guys get drafted or how many guys are draftable. I don't necessarily subscribe to the notion that they're connected. I think they're mutually exclusive. But the point is, when you have 11 guys drafted, and to be clear, it was not projected that 11 guys would get drafted. I think right. A lot of us thought it would be 7 or 8. You know, Jordan Whittington gets picked. You know, Ryan Watts gets picked late, and, you know, they wind up with 11. I do think that's a, you know, an indication of the type of player that they've been able to recruit under Steve Sarkisian. And that's, I think we all believe that that type of thing is going to continue. I mean, I had a little thing late Saturday as the draft was winding down, you know, looking at three guys who could get into the first round next year. And you start looking at the 24 roster, it's like, yeah, Kelvin Banks, Quinn Ewers, Isaiah Bond. I mean, those are three guys, especially Bond, if he plays well, why can't he get into the first round? Ethan Burke potentially. So, you know, there's reason to believe that. I don't know that they're going to get 11 guys drafted again next year, but I mean, he has this thing on the track where every year they're going to be good. Every year they have the pieces. And if you have the pieces, those guys are going to inevitably wind up, you know, being in the first round, maybe the second round mix. So that's where Texas is. They, you know, Sark has them in a really, really positive, really optimistic space right now, both as a team and the individual pieces moving on to the next level.
Yeah. Hey Josh, since you're sort of newer to the beat, I had a question for you as somebody who's still not an outsider, but somebody who has an outside perspective. There was an issue with Texas football for a long time with culture in the locker room, right? There was a lot of drama. There's a lot of transferring. There was a lot of fights going on. As a guy who's sort of new to the beat, what has been your experience with the Texas culture of what Steve Sarkisian has brought in? And what do you think the next step, like moving forward, is?
You know, we don't watch a ton of practice, obviously. So, you know, it's kind of, you know, my vantage point outside of like talking to sources and dealing with people inside, you know, that it's a little limited, but you know, everybody talks about the culture, and right. And that can be a lot of coach speak, and that can be a lot of player speak, but you know, you listen to, you know, veteran guys, right? You know, you listen to, you know, Vernon Broughton and Alfred Collins and David Gabenda and the center's name is escaping me.
Jake Majors.
Jake Majors, thank you. Guys who have been in the program 4 or 5 years, they really talk about the differences between when they first got here, when it was under Tom Herman, versus the differences of what it's become under Steve Sarkisian. And look, I've been doing this a long time. I mean, the locker room and the locker room politics is like 90% of the issues when there are issues. And you just don't hear about those things coming out of Texas. And again, my viewpoint is very limited, having not covered a season here yet, still getting to know a lot of people, a lot of the key people, but you don't hear problems coming out of the locker room. And you hear about, you know, the veteran guys leading the way. And isn't that what it's supposed to be, right? A coach comes in, and when a coach comes in year one, year two, you're trying to instill your culture in the program. That starts with the older guys, right? The older guys are supposed to get on board, and the older guys are teaching the younger guys, and then the younger guys become older guys, and on down the way it goes. And you know, just I think, you know, talking to Quinn Ewers twice during spring practice. The first time we talked to him, he came off as this very mature young person. Like, he has the weight on his shoulders, but he struck me as a very mature young person, understanding what is expected of him and understanding what is being asked of him. So, you know, I'm curious to see how he turns into a leader. Like, he hasn't had to be, you know, the full blown veteran guy, right? You had guys like that in the locker room, right? Guys like Byron Murphy, guys like DeMondre Sweat, Xavier Worthy was an older guy. Yours hasn't had to be that guy yet, but now with this team, at, you know, being a three year starter at the most important position, this is now his team. So I'm really curious to see how he leads this group.
Eric?
Josh, we'd be remiss if we didn't get, you know, kind of your basketball perspective. Obviously, you know, you've probably covered more basketball in your time here than you have actual football games. What are your thoughts on, you know, really the reshaping of Rodney Terry's roster over the offseason?
Yeah, it's still a work in progress. I mean, you know, as we sit here now on Monday, they've got 3 open scholarships to use. The portal window closes on May 1st. So, you know, in terms of guys leaving Texas, that business is done. I don't know that they got like hammered in the portal. I mean, Tyrese Hunter, that was expected. Dylan Mitchell, that was expected. Mitchell to me is a pretty tangible loss just because of what his best is. And I don't know that, look, I covered like 8 games, 10 games, and there were games where, especially on offense, Dylan Mitchell was just a guy out there. And you sort of forgot that he was out there. You know, defensively, a lot of that time, he was terrific. Offensively, not so much. So, you know, you look at what they've lost and you look at what they're bringing in. You know, Trayvon Mark from Arkansas is kind of this, not enigma, but not super consistent. But when he's got it going, he's as good as anybody on that roster. So, you know, you look at the pieces, veteran pieces, you know, guys who have played 100, 110, 115 career games because of the COVID stuff. And you got the extra year back. I like what they're putting together. But again, I think this roster lacks like some size and some physicality. If they're able to get Brandon Garrison from Oklahoma State, right? They had him on campus for the spring game. if Rodney Terry is able to swing Brandon Garrison, I start looking at this thing a little bit differently. Need more size, need more physicality. And, you know, it's getting pretty late in the portal. Like the window closes on Wednesday. So at this point, the options in the portal are what they are. You know, you'll probably have some like 11th hour guys jump in at the end here over the next 48 hours. But for the most part, it is what it is. I don't know that the answer is like sitting waiting in the portal. So I'm very intrigued to see what they do with these last three scholarships. But, you know, at least one of those has to go to some size.
Keenan, being a basketball guy, I'll give you a chance. Do you want to have a quick follow-up?
Yeah. I had a question about – I don't know if you're familiar with this guy, but I've heard Texas linked to Kevin Pelton Jr. Out of San Diego. He's like a 6'8 wing, defensive, kind of a lockdown guy. I think he'd be a great fit. He's a four-star out of high school. He's going into his sophomore year. So I think – like my take would be they need to get more wing defense, like perimeter defenders, in addition to getting these big athletic bigs, but they only have three spots left. So how would you allocate those spots if you're Rodney Terry?
I think you need some size. And I think you look at Tramon Mark, and if he's going well, like that's great. I think you could use another knockdown guy because I don't know that they have like a great knockdown guy right now. The problem with needing a knockdown guy, and just like, it's the same thing with needing size. Like, everybody wants size and everybody wants a knockdown guy. So it's not like Texas can just, again, walk into the portal and just pull one of these guys out, because if they could have done that, they would have done it already. So, you know, one thing, and I don't know if this is like in the works, but just one thing to keep in mind, don't be surprised if they hold one of those scholarships late. There's international stuff going on. There's a lot of 18, 19-year-old kids in Europe who are going to play in the World Championships, stuff abroad. They typically don't make college decisions until June, July. So just something to keep in mind. Like, if they wind up holding one or two of these scholarships until late, the international stuff might be in play. Just putting that out there.
Yeah. And that's like a super common thing. Like guys like Tommy Lloyd and Mick Cronin really like jumped onto that international, like a lot of the Pac-12 schools and the WCC schools sort of jumped on to the European player pool. And if you look last year, there were some very effective players who are international guys, right? Ade Mara for UCLA, Adem Bona for UCLA. I think they're both international guys. So yeah, there's a big market now. And now that they're figuring out how to integrate NIL to these overseas kids, because if you talk to Zach Edey, he didn't make a cent off of NIL, which is a crime.
Is crazy.
It's a crime. It's highway robbery. But you know, as far as like you were saying, they might hold out for some international guys. You talk about guys that are big, that can pass, that can shoot, play like sort of forward and guard combo roles. Those are your Euro guys. That's what they do. My main beat is the NBA draft, so I watch a lot of international basketball, and that's like their strength.
The thing with the international guys, you know, that's always been intriguing to me, and I watch probably more international stuff than the average fan, just because I'm a sicko like that and I just enjoy it. You know, a lot of the high level Euro kids have been playing professionally since they're 15, 16 years old, right? You know, the way it works in Europe is you go to the academy when you're 10, 11, 12 years old, very young, do your schooling there. And the higher end guys, like, look, Luka Doncic was playing professionally when he was 14. That's an extreme case. But again, a lot of these kids will play professionally when they're 15, 16, 17 years old, not get paid. Because if they get paid, they're not eligible to go to college and play in the United States. So I'm always on board when it's European kids and guys who have been playing professionally, you know, especially kids from Eastern Europe, right? Like Soviet bloc, those kids just grow up hard and they grow up Serbia. Tough. And they're usually Serbia, right? They're usually ball players. So again, I don't know that'll be a thing here at Texas, but if you see, you know, one or two scholarships being held, maybe something like that's in play.
Josh, I'm going to go ahead and bring us out here. We like to end things with our guests with usually a fun question, kind of an anecdote. So this is the one I want to go with for you. In my now entering my ninth year of doing this, that's some pretty eventful pressers slash seasons, ones that just make you scratch your head. I'll give the abbreviated version here. I went through my second to last year covering Group of Fives down in South Florida, where Butch Davis, the head coach of Florida National, accused the school of sabotaging the football program, saying that they were using youth pads, refusing to do a press conference, saying that just like players need NIL, programs need NIL as well. Again, the abbreviated version, and me getting stiffed on a post-game presser saying, Eric, I will talk to you on Tuesday after flying to Huntington, West Virginia to cover a game. So all in 1 year, Josh, what is kind of with this, and within the statute of limitations, I don't want to get you in trouble, but what is the most outlandish just post-game moment or anecdote from your career covering games?
Wow, I've been doing this a long time. I've been doing this a lot longer than 9 years. Are you guys familiar with Monmouth University in New Jersey?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, Monmouth University was coached. I was covering Monmouth. King Rice, okay, who was a point guard for North Carolina in the 1980s, okay, he was the coach at Monmouth, and he was just you never knew what you were getting when he walked into a press conference. You know how Rodney Terry is like a little vanilla or very vanilla, and you sort of know what you're getting?
A little vanilla, yeah.
A little vanilla. Picture Rodney Terry the exact polar opposite, and that was King Rice. King Rice would walk into a press conference and like blow you away for 20 minutes with everything you could ever want, or he was going to walk in the door, say six words, curse you out, and leave. That was the range. But I don't know that I could like pinpoint like any specific like one press conference, but like those like 4 years covering Monmouth. And look, he and I had a great relationship. Like I still talk to him. I talked to him last week. Like that's my guy. You know, was very helpful in my career, just, you know, trying to help me raise my profile. But, you know, I would tell, and Eric, I'm sure you can attest to this, like any young person like trying to break into the business, covering those groups of fives, covering those low majors, mid majors, the underserved programs that don't get a lot of media, there is all kinds of stories to be told. Most of those coaches will let you inside and talk to them. If you are a young journalist wanting to break in, group of five, mid major, low major, they will let you do almost whatever you want within reason. So that's my advice.
No doubt about that. He is Josh Newman. You can catch him out at Lone Star Live. Find him on Twitter at Joshua_Newman. Josh, hope you enjoyed it. Hopefully you'll be a repeat guest. We plan on doing this for a long time. So appreciate you making 10, 15 minutes chopping up, my man. Appreciate it.
Appreciate you guys. Be good.
Yep. All right, Keenan, let's go ahead and kind of recap here with our last 13 minutes left here in the show. A lot to dive into there with what Josh said, but I want to bring it back to the football sense. Again, the standard being set with 11 players being drafted and then spinning it forward to 2025. Projected, Keenan, I sent you the screenshot. 24/7 Sports projects three Longhorns to be drafted in the first round. You have a top five left tackle projecting Kelvin Banks, a top 10 quarterback in Quinn Ewers, and a top 25 receiver in Isaiah Bond. Three first round picks, Keenan, projected next year. Again, that standard being set, you have to think. I know we touched on a little bit, but final four a bust, correct?
Yeah. No, I mean, obviously you have to – I think they're going to probably make the playoff. I think it would be a major failure if they didn't make the playoff. I think that would be a really bad sign. Since there's how many teams are in it now? 12?
12. 12
teams. So, yeah, so you don't finish top 12 with that roster, like, not great, but I'm not worried about their making the playoffs as much as I am. Yeah. I mean, you gotta start winning games, man. I mean, as I know that Sark has done so much already, he's completely flipped this program. And I did the same thing at Washington basically, but never got them to the heights that he got this Texas program. But he took an 0-12 Washington team. I think he got them to like 8-4 within 2 years or something. So he's turned around like disasters before. But yeah, I mean, with 11 dudes getting drafted, that is, like you said this earlier, and I wanted to kind of expand on it. As far as these scouts in the NFL, these decision makers that are drafting these players, they see what's going on at Texas, and they're like, those guys know how to develop, right? Those guys know what they're doing. That's why we took Jordan Whittington in the draft instead of a UDFA. That's why they took Keelan Robinson in the draft instead of being a UDFA. That's why they took Watson, the draft, right? You know what I mean? Right. Like so many of these guys in past years probably would have been undrafted free agents, and they got picked because the Texas staff is just doing a good job developing. And what I heard the Rams say about Jordan Whittington, like, warmed my heart, man. I think it was the GM and McVay were sitting there, and the GM said, he lives and breathes what we want. Like, he is a hardworking, positive attitude, veteran type of guy. And he'll probably be mostly a special teams guy, I would imagine, or a lot of it will be special teams. But he'll probably get on the floor or on the field too, and they'll probably let him, you know, throw some passes his way. He's a great blocker on the outside, so he's got a role. But just the fact that the culture from Texas is getting guys drafted is just an absolute 180 from 5 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that speaks out for me, again, is that culture. But let's also look at it like this as well. You know, you talk about Jordan Whittington, Keelan Robinson, a guy who embodies that culture, who, you know, Steve Sarkisian's talked about as the, one of the best gunners in the nation. That guy, and not even just the culture aspect, a third down back for the majority of his career who puts in the work, runs a 4-4, puts up 20-plus reps on the bench at his size, that's a football player, man.
Oh, yeah.
That's a football player. No one's going to tell me. No one's going to tell me that Jalen Ford isn't a football player. Jalen Ford is someone who, again, had to earn his time in the lineup. I don't see any reason why that guy can't be an immediate contributor on special teams and have an extended career as well. So yes, Jess, yeah. When I look at that number, I just look at that standard being set. And then coming to the 2025 guys, man, you know, I'm going to kind of start here. Chris Bennett talks about, look at Jay Witt's tweet after he's drafted. Absolutely.
Yeah, that was really cool. He basically just said, let's get to work or something like that. Like, let's go. Like, let's start. That's awesome.
I really quick, SD says, we're not going 11-1 at Jake Bayless. He follows it up with, it'll still be a good season, just slow it down. Hey, listen.
I think it could go 11-1. I don't think that's quite out of reality.
I don't have any issue with Texas fans who have lived through everything in the past and want to slow things down a bit. However, I'm just being real and looking at what's on this roster. And again, I'm sure Texas fans are like, yeah, I've heard that for the past 20 years. But as I was going to make the point with the 2025 guys, and that's why I led with, you're talking about a top five projected. We'll see what happens. Projected.
Yeah.
Top five left tackle, a top 10 quarterback. That alone should get you 8-9 wins, 10 wins, double-digit wins. And then this is not talking about the rest of the guys who will kind of emerge here as well. But I want to ask you this. In terms of specifically, you know, Banks, I think all of us think that Banks, especially after his freshman year, was a guy you could just write in pen as a top five pick. So not as much Banks. Quinn Ewers at 8. Part of that, again, quarterbacks are valuable. No doubt about that. What kind of strikes your mind when you see Quinn Ewers as a top 10 pick? Because I'll say this, and I said it following Jeff and Jordan's show a few days ago, that I think Quinn Ewers has all the potential. I think he is an excellent college football quarterback. I don't think Quinn Ewers ever turns into that guy. And it's a high standard, right? For me, if you draft someone at 8, then you think they're going to turn into one of those top 8 to 10 guys who can win you a championship.
Yep.
If you're drafting someone at the 20s, in my mind, that screams to me either a developmental player or someone who you think, all right, this is, you know, I don't want to disparage Quinn Ewers, like a Kenny Pickett type, right? Someone who you think is ready to step in and maybe, you know, be a solid starter, but not someone who is going to carry that baton. Listen, it's tough because, as SD says, Q is like Goff, right? It's tough because I love Quinn as a college quarterback, and I said the guy is my most underrated player in the nation. So I don't want to sound like I'm bashing him. But just curious your thoughts when you take a look at that draft mock there on Quinn. Again, very early, but your thoughts.
I'm not surprised with the Kelvin Banks being as high as he was. Since his freshman year, people have been saying that about Kelvin Banks, that he's a bona fide left tackle. And I've heard this, I think it may have been a Bob Sturm thing, actually, from the Ticket in Dallas. He's kind of a local legend in the state of Texas. And he has this sort of thing where he talks about players as like in their draft, in the draft range that a guy is, it's like, how much more impact will he make than the guy 5 in front of him and the guy 5 behind him?
Sure.
And that also depends on position, of course. Now, if Quinn ends up like Goff, that's not that bad. But do you want to take that 8th overall? I don't know.
Right.
Goff went number 1 overall. He's great, but he's not Justin Herbert. He's not, You know, so if you can get a season out of Quinn, if Quinn can start consistently hitting the deep ball, and I think having receivers that are better at tracking midair will help. Because as good as Xavier Worthy was, again, one of my favorite Longhorns ever, he wasn't elite at tracking the ball. You know, he like you said, he'll double track every once in a while. He double tracked on the catch against Alabama. I think this receiving core is going to be very helpful to him because he has a lot of options versus really, you know, he had two main ones last year and then some freshmen that got some time. But now he has, you know, these transfers, Bond, Golden, Bolden, and then he has, you know, Ryan Wingo. I mean, DeAndre Moore. Parker Livingston is really good, too. You know, I don't know that he'll see the field much this year, but, like, that's a guy that could play in the NFL. According to one of my friends who's a scout, he loves Parker Livingston, thinks he's an awesome, like, really, you don't trust that Bond yet. Well, I mean, you know, they're going to have to see. They're going to have to see how he – so if you could give me something real quick,
yeah.
What kind of player is Isaiah Bond as a receiver? Who would you comp him to, like vaguely comp him to even, if you don't have an exact?
Let me think. I mean, Isaiah Bond, speed-wise, I mean, he's someone who – I mean, he's going to challenge any defense.
Oh, okay. He's like a deep guy? Deep ball guy?
Well, I mean, if you just take a look, based on – the thing is he's played a couple offenses at Alabama last year. They kind of reshaped that offense. Mm-hmm. So the way he was used, I think Isaiah Bond almost strikes me as, in my opinion, I'm just going to give you the top end ceiling here, right? Like a Justin Jefferson type. Not Justin Jefferson, probably a little bit bigger than him. But I think that in terms of, you know, Justin Jefferson is someone who
signed me up.
Yeah. You know,
sign me up, dude.
It's always going to be able to kind of beat that guy. And get into his route and make the argument, hey, I'm open, right? And that I was kind of toy around with Stephon Diggs, but Stephon Diggs is smaller than Isaiah Bond in my mind. I don't know if Isaiah Bond's quite the route runner he is, but that's kind of where I have him. Really quick. No, go ahead. Did you wanna
I just said in. I'm in. Gotcha. I'm in with those guys.
No. Really quick before we toss it to Chip and Zay, again, we're going to be talking about this throughout the week, so we won't go too long each day, man. But favorite SEC event, you know, and there's four that I have in mind. And listen, if any of the listeners, watchers have another event, let me know. Keenan, if you have one, let me know. But the ones that I have in mind are Texas, Georgia, of course, in Austin, Texas, Texas A&M football, of course. In College Station, the renewal of that rivalry, UT women's basketball versus Dawn Staley in South Carolina, whether that game, and I listen, for my sake, I'd love to see that game in Austin, but as I've said, even if that's one that's in Columbia, I might travel for that one just to go cover it. And Texas, I'm sure they're going to play Ole Miss. I'm sure the schedule makers are going to make it that, you know, and Chris Beard, you know, and if that is one that they decide to have in Austin as well. I guess maybe not which one are you looking forward to most, because we can kind of save that, but just rank those for you.
Yeah, let me throw in one more too, which would be if Texas, I think they will, host John Calipari's Arkansas Razorbacks.
Okay, sure.
That's going to be a monster game because all eyes are going to be on that program this year. If Texas can beat them, I mean, here's the problem. I'm sorry, I'm not just getting off on a tangent.
No, go for it.
The problem with the way that Calipari builds these teams, he builds them with all these five-star freshmen and two or three transfers. And the problem is he goes up against these teams that are older and bigger and more mature in the tournament, and he loses, like Oakland. Oakland beating Kentucky wasn't that big of an upset if you look at the statistics of these guys and the ages and the size. It makes sense that Trey Townsend was unstoppable. It makes sense that nobody on Kentucky could guard a 21-year-old badass forward for Oakland named Trey Townsend. I think he just committed to Arizona. But, you know, that stuff makes sense. Anyway, that's beyond the point. I would say Georgia, Texas, number one. Got to be number one. Although, man, Texas A&M, that's going to be a banger, dude. I can't wait for that. So I'd probably say those are my top two. Put Arkansas, Texas, three, and then women's against South Carolina, four, and then Ole Miss against Chris Beard, five. That'd be my top five rankings.
Okay. I will say this as Chris Bennett. Of course, I got to, you know, show this one says,
of course.
I'm glad you didn't bring up Jordan Shipley. When
talking about cross-racial comps are important, man. You can't just say, like, that drives me crazy in basketball scouting. And somebody's like, oh, he's like Dirk Nowitzki. I'm like, no, he's just a tall white guy. He's not anything like Dirk Nowitzki.
It's like with the draft this last weekend in Cooper DeJean, you know, I'm surprised we didn't get, you know.
Who's the only white corner in the NFL?
The Jason Sehorn comps.
Of course he did. Of course he did.
You know, it's like, how long did it take before Cooper DeJean has moved to safety? No, he's a corner.
There's nothing
about that dude that is a safety. Nevertheless, here's kind of my thinking here. It's hard to separate. I'll be honest. I am not the biggest F1 guy. However, I know it's a hell of an event, right? Like, I know it is a freaking event to the point where, like, I think there are a lot of people who are probably going to be putting their homes and apartments on the open market trying to make a buck.
Oh, yeah.
For that Airbnb. Weekend. I just feel like as a bleep show, Georgia, Texas, F1 all the same weekend. The city's going to be nuts. Downtown, I just moved out of it. You're still there. It's going to be it's not going to be for the weak at heart. We know that for a fact. So I'm going to put that one, but I will say this. That still has a lot left to be seen as to what we're going to get come that week. Yeah. Because Texas plays Michigan before then. Georgia has, you know, some opponents before then. We'll see what we're getting as far as that matchup. You want me to be honest with you, Keenan? The matchup that I think we know from right now, we're going to get showcase of like two Titans. Vic Schaefer's Texas women and Dawn Staley's South Carolina women.
Yep.
Of the five, I feel like that's the one who, you know, you can book from right now, especially if it's in Austin. We saw what the UConn women's game was last year, right?
Yeah, it was nuts.
Especially if that game's in Austin. I think that's going to be a can't-miss event because you know you're going to get two rock-solid teams. So that's something that I'm looking at. Let's bring in Zay here so we can run this question by him.
What
he kind of thinks. Zay, you know, the question, first off, what up? The question that we're kind of running by is, and we'll probably bring Chip on here in a second as well, is what SEC event come 2024-25 are you looking forward to the most? And the events that I just have, just off the top of my head, are Texas, Georgia, of course, the renewal of Texas A&M, Texas, South Carolina women. Keenan throws in Texas versus Arkansas with John Calipari. And then I have Texas versus Ole Miss, obviously the Chris Beard angle, especially if that game is in Austin. What do you think about those just as like SEC, you know, games that you're looking forward to?
Yeah, all those are on point for sure. Texas, Arkansas football, I think that's a scary game to look at in the future. Seeing Texas go to Rupp Arena for basketball, and it doesn't matter if Mark Pope's there or not, it's still Kentucky. It's still that type of legacy. But, yeah, I think y'all nailed them, Chip.
Yeah, I mean, Texas, Georgia, Texas, Arkansas, Texas A&M football. But there's a lot. I mean, you mentioned it. Other sports. I mean, Texas baseball against all comers in the SEC.
That's a good point. Texas, I mean, LSU. You
know, woo. A&M right now in Arkansas. A top college baseball.
Yeah.
There and Texas go. Somehow.
Some bad keeps, boys.
Texas so. Somehow keeps winning these Big 12 series.
Haven't they lost seven straight game ones or something like that? Haven't they lost like every game one this whole season?
Insane to fathom. But listen, I know I'm definitely looking forward to this. As I've said to Chip, I'm willing to come out of pocket if I got to go to Columbia to cover that Texas South Carolina women's game. But a lot of SEC events to look forward to. Fellas, what is going on? Obviously, a very eventful weekend for the Texas football program. Steve Sarkisian, 11 players drafted. I'm sure y'all got a lot you're going to dive into. We will pass the baton to you, fellas.
All right. Appreciate y'all, fellas. Good job. Appreciate good show.
Appreciate it, fellas. Y'all be cool.
Appreciate it.